EFTM. Tech, cars, lifestyle.
This is the EFTM podcast with Trevor Long.
EFTM.
G'day, g'day, welcome. Great to have your company. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Awesome to be back. Took a little week off because two things. It was school holidays were ending and it was just a nightmare. And secondly, it was just a crazy week last week. The Apple event, Daniel Ricciardo was a last minute call up. It just all happened and it threw me right out of sync with my week and my day. So apologies for skipping a week on you, but I'm sure you understand. I'll give you a full refund. A full refund, okay? Even the postage and handling, I'm going to refund it all. So I'm sending checks to no one. So I will actually, because of the Ricciardo interview, and I know I did publish that everywhere, but for those pure podcast listeners, I'm going to play you the Daniel Ricciardo interview later. That'll come shortly. Well, I've got a bunch of calls to get through. There's news on the Apple front that's outside of the event from last week. If you want the rundown on the Apple event last week, please subscribe to Two Blokes Talking Tech. We covered it all. We are giving away a car, so there'll be more news on that. And that's just, you know, we've just got back-to-back, just going to smash through this here, and hopefully we all learn something from today's calls and everything that's going on. So you know what? This one's for Matt.
It might sound crazy what I'm about to say, but Trevor Long's the world's best techie. He's the kind of guy we picked on at school, and it wasn't fair, but he don't care, he's cool today.
That's an in-joke for the Man Cave moderators on Facebook. So if you're not part of the Man Cave, jump in, join on facebook.com/EFTM online. Just search for EFTM and join the EFTM Man Cave on Facebook. A great group of people who have questions, have answers, anything about tech, cars and lifestyle. We love talking about it there. So shout out to everyone there and especially to Matt who hates that song. But I don't care. So yes, I will bring you the interview with Daniel Ricciardo, and just so some context there, because it'll just happen randomly in the show because I'm just going to play it. But that, like, that's the fourth time I've spoken to Daniel, and the first time it's just kind of at a whim. Do you think I could get him? Because we're in Barcelona at the same time. Took a few months to build a relationship with Red Bull and do all that. The second year, easy. Hey, Red Bull, we're going to be in town again. Can we do that again? Yes, done. Like literally an email. Then he changes friggin' teams. So, hi Renault, I'm Trevor. You don't know me, but in like it's a back and forth on emails. Great, finally, and that was a last minute thing. Like we took all the gear to Barcelona. We had extra people to help with that gear, and they left town, and we still managed to get the gear to the track and sort it all out in at a very last minute, very terrible room in the back of a truck. It was very weird, but we still did it. It was awesome. Last year, COVID happened, and so we just couldn't go, even though we were ready to go. It didn't work for anyone that we would kind of rock up and do that. It didn't seem appropriate anyway. And so then he changed his bloody teams again. So here I am, back and forward on the email, trying to prove myself. But we got there in the end, with thanks to a lot of great people that I work with in the media, like Paul Murray at Sky and Alex Cullen at the Today Show. Mark Levy at 2GB in Sydney, who essentially vouched for me and proved that I was a real person with a real output. McLaren then were just unbelievably awesome to deal with. But literally days after the final kind of, yeah, cool, okay, we'll try and arrange something. You know what happened? And I think I said this on the podcast with Stephen last week. I got up at 1:30 a.m. to have a shower and come to the office for the Apple event. And I looked, checked my email. And there's an email saying, yep, Daniel's locked in for tomorrow at 6 o'clock London time. And I went, oh, that's 3 a.m. tomorrow morning. The worst part was that night I was panicking. So I set my alarm and I did it all for 2. check the you know, GMT time. It was 6 o'clock in the evening. It was 4 a.m. So I get to the office at 2:15, just slowly setting up. I Google time in London. You know, it's 15, 20 minutes until I need to make the call. So I was freaking out. I hadn't done any technical tests of the whole thing. But anyway, I think we pulled it off all right. It was a good, fun chat. He was absolutely in fine spirits and, yeah, had a ball. It was good to talk to him. So I know that there's people here that haven't watched the whole interview, so hopefully you can enjoy it here as well as everywhere else that I've published it. And if you do get to the interview and you think I've heard this before, just skip ahead 20 minutes. Won't kill you. This morning I published a review on Facebook and YouTube of the Genesis GV80. Now, I've got to tell you, I really want you to watch that review and see the pictures of this car. God, it's a beautiful vehicle. We're talking big luxury SUV. Genesis, which is the top-end Hyundai. It's like what a Lexus is to a Toyota. Beautiful interior, amazing car, some amazing technology, 3D dash. So stereoscopic LCD screen so that you got this perception of depth in the dashboard. Impossible to demonstrate in a video or explain to you here. But you've got to go to a Genesis Hyundai dealer and see one. It was so cool. Also, eye tracking. And the eye tracking will alert you that you're not looking at the road. So if you're an idiot and you're looking at your phone, boom, we'll tell you so. And I just, during the week having had that car, I was kind of looking at going, this is the kind of technology that it should be a requirement of any self-driving car, for example. We had all the drama and all the fanboys were out this week at me about the Tesla crash. Well, I'm sorry, but Tesla should not be allowed to market or sell something that is self-driving because it doesn't exist. When that feature is available, sell it. Charge extra for it. But right now, I think it's outrageous that Telstra can sell a product called full self-driving for $10,000. Shouldn't be allowed. Anyway, that's just me. I may be the only one. I may be Robinson Crusoe on that. But I just think that they shouldn't be allowed to do it exactly the way they're doing. Would appreciate your views. Let me know what you think of the Genesis GV80 when you watch that video as well. I was also thinking this morning about the old weight loss journey. It's funny now that you lose a bit of weight and then it is a common question, like, hey, going with it and stuff like that, because it's not an easy thing to continue. I plateaued, I hit a wall, I achieved my goal, but then I went, I'm still fat. I'm looking in the mirror going, you still need to lose weight, champ. But I don't. It's funny, I just want to get to 20 kilos now. I just want to get to having lost 20 kilos. But I think I'll end up back where I am now. This is my sweet spot. I like this. I like this style. I like this look. I like my clothes. I don't want to look ridiculous and skinny, as weird as that sounds. But it's funny because, you know, you struggle with it over an Easter period, for example. I love chocolate. Big problem. And the other thing, you know, the other thing that comes into it, I've got to start exercising. And I've said this before, I haven't actually done that yet, which is awesome because it means that I've got ground to make up on myself. But I struggle with my schedule and when I would do that. But the other thing I will be very honest with you is stress. Stress is a major factor in this. And, you know, things in life trigger you. People in life set out to trigger you. People bait you with things they say or do, actions they take. And, you know, it doesn't matter how strong, how good your family unit is, how great your mates' network is. Stuff can be stressful. And I can tell you right now, I bought a chocolate bar this morning and I smashed it because I got really frustrated by something and I know I need to ignore it because it doesn't really affect me. But it's one of those things that makes you go, and it's also one of those things where you're trying to do the right thing overall. So you try not to react to what other people do and say, but it still causes you stress internally. So despite the fact that you can put on a brave face, as they say, still stressful, right? And stress is a big factor, I think, in your own well-being, not just mental well-being, but physical well-being. And that's what's fascinating about it. It's funny because I think about Stan Zamarnik, who would say stress doesn't exist. He would probably have a different word for what I experienced, which would just be anger, I think. And as a result of my anger, I wanted to eat. He was a funny man, Stan Zamarnik, and an absolute, by the way, a top bloke. He was very generous to me, very kind to me, and overwhelmingly kind to my wife who worked for him. and I did a lot of work for him. I built stanzamarnik.com.au back in the day, and we had a lot of fun with doing that stuff. I don't know why that came up. I'm just gibbering now. Anyway, I'm just going to eat like a pig this week, and then, as we always say, next week, start again. but anyway, that's why we've got scales, to keep us on track. All right, let's get cracking with calls here on the EFTM Podcast.
EFTM.
This is the EFTM Podcast. EFTM Podcast.
Trevor Long taking your calls. You've got a tech question or you want to chat about anything you might have read, seen or heard around the place, just get on the website, EFTM.com, click Ask Trev. G'day, Adrian.
G'day, Trev. How you going?
Yeah, real good, buddy. What can I do for you?
Right. Well, I've actually got two issues, so whether you can work through both of them. The first one to do with some earbuds and my Samsung mobile phone.
Yep. What sort of phone you got? The Samsung Galaxy?
Okay. So I've got, S20 FE.
Right, yep.
And I'm a truck driver. I generally drive with just one earbud in for calls and streaming music through the truck if I can do it. And I got a pair of Powerbeats Pro for them.
Yep.
And mainly went for that one because you can actually use one or the other to make and receive calls. So it was handy to sort of have one in, and when the battery run low, because I'll drive up to 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
When that one runs low, I can take it out, put it in the case to charge, and use the other one.
Right. Yeah. But, good.
Yeah, and it was really handy. But I was having a ton of problems, connectivity issues. And I don't know, I don't know if it's a thing, but because I had the Samsung phone, I thought, is that an issue because it's an Apple product?
Yeah. It shouldn't be. The only difference with the Powerbeats is that you get the advantage of simplicity of pairing and stuff with the Apple.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But anyway, I've got an Apple store in Doncaster here, so I ended up having them in there three times. I replaced them once. Jeez. Had a look at them a second time, and the third time when they kept playing up, I went back. And I've got to say, I've never had an issue with Apple customer service. Absolutely dynamite. The guy there that I last saw said, look, there's some issue. It's clearly not working for you. I'd recommend a full refund. He made no bones about it. Real simple, and he was fantastic.
Yeah, it's really amazing, good. Isn't it? Because in the end, they probably realise it's as much frustrating as it is for them as it is for you.
Yeah.
So, just move on. They are bloody good headphones, though. Did you like the music quality of them, though?
Yeah, look, all that was great. My son and my wife have got a pair each for their Apple phones and don't seem to have a problem. So don't know what it was. But anyway, so I thought, all right, I need to go looking for other ones. I was just gun shy of just getting another pair of them again. So I started looking, and I was looking at the Bose Quiet Comfort earbuds.
Yep.
Similar price from when I bought the original Powerbeats. And
yep.
The first guy I spoke to at a store, a guy that I know, I asked him about this ability to use one or the other.
Yep.
And he said, don't think so. And he Googled something, or he brought up some site, and he looked, and he said, no, the right one's the master one. And I thought, oh, okay. And anyway, I went off and I was looking at other earbuds at another store, and a bloke tried to recommend the Bose again, and I said, look, no good because it can't do this. He said, oh, I think you'll find they can. So he Googled it, found CNET, the CNET review on Bose, on these earbuds, and it says in there that you can do it. And I thought, okay. And I thought, I just want to double check. So I rang Bose customer support. And I was really clear. I said, listen, I need to know, can I use the one or the other earbud independently of each other to make and receive calls? Yes, you can.
And let me guess, you can't.
Well, I bought them, I got them home, and they wouldn't do it. But then I rang Bose technical support this time rather than customer support and said, listen, this is a problem. This is what I was told. A lady I spoke to initially, I was actually driving, so I couldn't, I just wanted to get an idea rather than try to troubleshoot then. And she said straight off the bat, yeah, you can. I thought, okay, well, when I get home, I'll ring back and try to troubleshoot it. So I rang back, technical support, and got someone different again, said the same thing, yes, you can. We tried to troubleshoot it, wouldn't do it.
Mm.
So after about 20 minutes of toing and froing, and she's gone off to check with someone, she's come back and said, no, you can't.
So where have you ended up? You're holding on to them, or have you found a pair that will do the job?
Well, I was going to go looking for a pair that could do the job, but this was all getting troubleshooted Friday night, and I had to go away, had to drive to Toowoomba over the weekend. So I took these, and I've got to say, the fit is just absolutely magnificent, most comfortable thing. The noise cancellation is just incredible.
Yeah.
And the quality is just awesome. And I'm starting to think, look, unless I really struggle with the battery charge, you know, how long the battery charges or lasts for, I might stick with them because they're bloody good. They are really good.
I mean, it's a weird thing, but I'll be honest, you know, unless you are, and, you know, it'd be amazing if I could find the time and just narrow myself to only review headphones, right? Because I could probably do it. There's that. I've got probably 8 sets of headphones sitting here upstairs in the office, ready to be reviewed. Like it's one of those things. You've got to give a set of headphones a week at least. You know, mow the lawns, do a walk, and even then, making calls is such a low priority these days. I'm not even sure I've made many calls with just one earbud. So it's not a thing that's tested a lot. The only thing I'd say is, you know, the Samsung Galaxy Buds Pro would I'd be amazed if they didn't do one ear only.
They do, but the thing that tipped me over the edge, well, that got me to go for the Bose initially, because I was looking at the Samsung ones, and you can apparently do that, but they don't have those little wingtips.
No, you're right. And see, mate, see, you've nailed me there, because that's my preference too, is ones that have some form of, you know, security around your ear.
I tried before the Power Beats. I tried a pair of Jabra Elite.
Yeah, they're
65T,
great.
I think they work well. I couldn't get them to stay in my bloody ear. I don't know if I've got an odd shaped ear, but, you know, so that's why the wingtips was.
I'll leave you with this on the headphones before we move on to your other thing. Be honest, I don't think that there's a better solution, especially for a bloke sitting in a truck all day. I don't think there's a better solution than a good old Plantronics actual phone earbud. You know, the little thing with the stalk out the side. Mate, I have 3 of those. Because I never have them with me at the right time. So I've got 1 in one bag, 1 at home. On a Tuesday when I do all my radio, like today, I did today extra, and then I was driving home. I had 2 radio spots on the way home. I know that hands-free in a car is bad. I don't want to waste my time by pulling over and, you know, losing 15 minutes of my day. So the Plantronics Voyager 5200 is an absolute cracker. Great quality calls, great to use, good
that's
battery
the thing,
life, far out.
That's the thing that's got the big thing that hangs over the back of your ear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wear glasses and it's bloody, it was awkward.
Okay.
It was just awkward. Oh, believe me, I've been looking.
You're a tough cookie to crack, you are.
I'm very hard to please, mate. Just ask me, missus.
What's the other thing going on in your world?
Okay, I'll try to make this quick because you've given me a ton of time already. Okay, so I've got Aussie Broadband NBN, and I've got Google Mesh, and now everything that I've heard and that since and listening to you, I wish I had gone down another path, but that's another issue. We've got a very long house. It's actually like 2 houses joined together. Long story.
Yep.
So I've got a couple of Google Mesh units scattered through the house, including one right up in a room right next to the front door, and that's connected via Ethernet cable. Okay.
Yep.
Now I like me bits and pieces of technology, and I got this door lock, Ultralock Pro. It's one of those ones where you can. It has a code, you can use a fingerprint, and you can also, it's Bluetooth, and you can get Wi-Fi enabled with a Wi-Fi bridge.
Yep.
Yeah. And it has geofencing and all that sort of garbage, right? So the issue was I was having troubles with the connectivity of that, and I couldn't figure it out, and I got hold of the customer or tech support. So 2 things. It turns out it has to be on 2.4 Wi-Fi, right, which is the initial issue I had with the mesh. But then I learned, and I'm staying corrected here, if you set up a guest network on Google Mesh, it defaults to 2.4.
Okay, yep, that's one option. The other trick I use is if you imagine that most mesh networks have both 2.4 and 5 gigahertz, they're constantly emitting the same Wi-Fi name. So I have we're sitting here in the office, right? It's a small space. The Wi-Fi router is really close, so I'm trying to vacuum clean, all right, and it only connects to 2.4. Do you know what you do? Walk a long way away. So if you were to power off a couple of the other mesh networks, and so the further distance you are away from the router, the more likely it is to use the 2.4 because it has better distance. That's the only trick I can give you on 2.4.
But But then, like I said, that end of the house is where mother-in-law lives with us. That's her part of the house.
Yep.
She needs a good connection up there, a strong Wi-Fi signal up there. And she's got, I've set up devices and stuff for her up there, which is why. But the next issue, though, is I finally found out through Ultralock or through their rep over here, is that it will not work with mesh systems. And I couldn't figure out.
I didn't
understand why. So he said what you can do as a short-term fix is if you've got a separate router, you can set that up.
And I think the reason is because they use a bridge Wi-Fi adapter. So it's rather than the device itself connecting to your Wi-Fi, the bridge, the little thing that plugs into the power point, it's not connecting to a mesh network. It's trying to connect to a standard router, and it's the mesh.
Yeah.
It's the bridge that's causing the problem, not the bolt or the lock. So,
So then tell me, and hopefully this will finish it. But so one solution that he tossed up, and I thought I'll give it a crack. I've got an old Apple time capsule here. And it's got, and I could set up separate 2.4 or 5 gig Wi-Fi signals. So I've plugged that into the Ethernet point in that front office. I've set up its own Wi-Fi signal off there, which is 2.4, and use that for the door to connect to. But then to keep that mesh, got Wi-Fi signal throughout the whole house, I've plugged the Google Mesh into the back of the Apple time capsule.
I worry that your network will be not ideal. I just worry that the IP addresses, the routing, you're actually going to create issues for your general network, as in speed, consistency, all for a lock.
Right. Yeah. So, after all that carry on, is there any real solution, or is it just like you've boxed yourself into a corner because of this bloody lock?
Yes, there it is. Right. Yes, that's what it is. lesson learned. It doesn't have – put it this way. The lock works. It doesn't have to be Wi-Fi connected, right? The lock can just work fingerprint and ID and stuff. So you just use it as that until you decide you want to upgrade to one that will be a bit more versatile in its connectivity.
Would that sort of thing with those Netgear Orbi and things like that, would that be the same problem because it's a mesh type of thing?
I would argue the one that you've got will be a problematic on pretty much any mesh network because of the Wi-Fi bridge solution, as opposed to it being, like a Samsung lock or something that directly connects to Wi-Fi. And here's the other thing, I'll be completely honest with you. I prefer my front door is not on the internet.
Yep.
At the point where the world comes crashing down and people are hacking into people's homes to get access, I'd prefer that the hardest thing to do was open a door.
Yeah.
All right, Adrian.
Yeah, good, mate. Well, fantastic, mate. I really appreciate your time.
No worries at all, buddy. Stay well.
Good on you. Thanks, Trevor.
Cheers, mate. And, it's a tough one, isn't it? Because you buy something awesome like that and you never really know if it's going to work. Now, Ultralock, just, looking online, it's kind of Amazon thing. He sounds like he's had a great customer service experience with the company, but unfortunately, it's just never going to do. And that's why sometimes I think that, something that you can buy in JB is not guaranteed to be more reliable, but it's certainly guaranteed to be easier to return. Walk in and say, listen, done work. And they're going to go, yeah, cool, most of the time. And there is a kind of duty of care that the big retailers put through a lot of products. That's my only reason for kind of having that preference situation. Anyway, good on you, Adrian. Thanks for getting in touch, buddy. And you can get in touch as well. Just go to the website, EFTM.com. And if you've got a question about tech, just get on the blower here. Go to the website, EFTM.com. Click Ask Trev. G'day, Ewan.
G'day, Trevor. How are you?
Yeah, real good, mate. What can I do for you?
Yeah, look, I'm building a new house and actually building a stud frame house.
Yep.
And what I'm concerned with is having Wi-Fi internet and it maybe being blocked by the stud frames.
You mean a steel frame?
Yeah, steel frame. Steel frame house.
Yep.
So I've been trying to do some research and have a look at running Cat 6 or Cat 7 cable through the house to various points in the house, and then maybe having like a Wi-Fi station in various locations on the house. You know, just trying to understand what I need to do and what's a cost-effective way of doing it. Because also I'm building a house at the moment.
Yeah, look, I think, to be honest, budget. It's really quite simple, Ewan. You won't get a huge issue with the steel frame for a start. It won't be world-ending for you. It's not like you're building a Faraday cage, right? Concrete is worse. So wood frame, steel frame, they've both got, you know, the gyprock on them. The Wi-Fi will get through those things. Concrete, like my front door of the office, there's, you know, I guess it's probably 15, 20 centimetre thick concrete, and seriously, I can't get the Wi-Fi to go through there just for the doorbell. So what might happen in a steel frame home is you get a bit of a bouncing of the signal that might take away a little bit of the signal, but you're spot on with your planning. What you do is if you run Cat 6, Cat 7, whatever you choose, mate, because in the end it's just up to the dude that's doing the install. Put the best in. You know, you're spending money on the house, you may as well. Put it wherever you can. Like, personally, if I was building a house, I'd put Cat 6 in every single room. Because you never know, even if you've got kids that are young now, when they move out, who knows, that's not going to become a gaming room. Or like, who knows, right? And you're going to have to rewire the bloody thing. At the very least, put them in the key areas like where the entertainment units are, where you think there's going to be your primary communications area. So you want a central point in the house where your modem's going to connect and actual internet starts from. And then you can decide to run what we call wireless access points, whether it's through a mesh system or a slightly higher-end system like a Ubiquiti that can be interconnected through Cat 6 or Cat 7, but broadly you're using that as your backhaul only. You're not actually using it for main connectivity, but you want your PlayStation, you want your TV. Prefer to have those things hardwired at any point in time, mate.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So I've also been doing some reading. So the Wi-Fis you were speaking about there, they'd be the powered over Ethernet, the POE?
It doesn't have to be, but obviously it's easier if you can get one that is. But also a lot of the time, because again, you're building from scratch, you can put a PowerPoint. So
yeah,
you've got this ability to go, we're going to put power, like behind my television or behind our entertainment unit, there are 8 PowerPoints. Because when we were renovating the inside of our joint, I said to the electrician, who's my brother-in-law, I said, I don't want to have any double adapters. I don't want to have power boards. What? That would be stupid, given that we're putting in PowerPoints. So, mate, over-engineer. More power, more connectivity, put it all in now. And if you have some power, and the power over Ethernet is actually more about the device itself, so the access point you plug in, and the other end, so the router, then the actual cabling that you put in.
Okay. So the other question I had was about putting in switches. So if I was to go, you know, if I was to have my TV and my Foxtel and all that, am I better off just putting a switch, you know, like running one line, one Ethernet cable to the living area and then having a switch there? Oh, to then divide it into the different places?
If I'm designing my house, I've got a cupboard, so the wife gets to choose how big the pantry and the walk-in wardrobe are, and I get to choose where the communications cupboard is. It might be in the corner of the garage, it might be in the middle of the house under the stairs, who knows, but there's a cupboard area, right? And that's where you get your telecommunications to come in, so that's where your NBN comes in. That's where you might even have your fuse box, I don't know. But that's certainly where you put your termination of every single Ethernet port in the house. So, again, at our entertainment unit, there's 3 Ethernet ports. I should have put more because we need more there. So we have put a little switch there. But it's not a managed switch, it's just a LAN hub, really. But if at best you have a switch in that communications closet, and that's where everything plugs in the house so that you can just plug away and plug new things in and wire them up as you go without having to put anything else in the house at all.
Okay.
All right. But and there's nothing stopping you having one Ethernet port where the entertainment unit is and then having a little mini switch or hub in the cupboard. It's just about efficiency. If you want the best out of your network, then you want a managed switch in that communications cupboard that's going to run the traffic out to the network correctly, rather than having multiple points of kind of disconnect and interrupt where it's being split up.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because it's all about cost now, you know.
Yeah.
When you're building the house, you
totally.
Know, it gets to the point where, like, you know, because even looking at Cat 6 cable, it's about $150 for 300 meters, I think. You know.
Yeah. Right.
So, and then just by getting the labor to do the terminations and all that.
Yeah.
That's why I was thinking about just running one line to specific points, and
so then if that's we're grinding it down now, then you want absolutely one of the best to the entertainment area, and you want one or two into the furthest reaches of the home, so that you ensure that if you do have any Wi-Fi issues, you can plug those with access points. And then remember this. Here's the great thing about the cost of networking. You know how I just said all your points come back to one place, you've got to manage, switch, you know, thousands of dollars? Forget all that. You can get a normal router. You go to Aussie Broadband, you sign up with NBN, it's got four LAN ports on the back. You can just plug directly from those LAN ports into that, you know, switch, into those ports at the communications cupboard end, which then terminate at the other end where your TV is, and you're done. You don't actually need big high-end gear. You can add to that over the years ahead. Just do this basic wiring up front.
Yeah, that was one of my plans as well, just to try and lay out all the cables and then build it up later. Anyway, thank you very much
for
that.
Man. Good luck with it, Ewan.
No worries. Thank you very much.
Cheers,
okay.
Mate. Good on you. Bye-bye. And it's a fun exercise building a brand new house. Gee whiz. I remember we did it in Perth back in a past life. And it's one of those fun things going, you know, where are we going to put every single PowerPoint? And then when we, here in Sydney, our current house, we were doing the renovation just of the inside. The outside's a disgrace. Going to do that soon. It's just fascinating to kind of go, well, no, I'm going to want, like in my office, in the little man cave, I think I have... I have six double PowerPoints under my desk, and then another six at the other end of the room where things like NAS and Foxtel and stuff used to be plugged in. So it's a little bit much, but hey, means no double adapters. I don't know. I'm just a narc for those kind of things. If you're doing it, do it once, do it right. What do they say? Measure twice, cut once. Same kind of concept. You're listening to EFTM.
You're listening to the EFTM podcast.
EFTM.
And thank you for doing that. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Appreciate your support. G'day, Michael.
G'day, Trev. How are you, mate?
Yeah, real good, mate. What can I do for you?
Mate, my daughter's turning 18 in July, and we're thinking of buying her a dash cam, but I want something that's pretty good, has a decent amount of features, and doesn't break the bank.
Mate, what's the bank, though? That's the question.
Your bank and my bank
might be different. Your bank and the bloke at JB Hi-Fi's bank are going to be different too.
Say between 1 and 400.
Oh, mate, you've set a nice price range there. I mean, there won't be an issue at all. Now, obviously, it's really quite simple. The more you spend, the better it is. I make no bones about that. The thing I would be looking for is rather than being sucked into the, you know, is it 4K and... You know, all those kind of things, because that makes a bit of a difference. But in the end, even a 4K dash cam is not absolutely the easiest thing to the differentiation between 4K in a dash cam and 4K on a TV is, you know, it's like chalk and cheese. It's not really that 4K-ish, if you like, right? The thing I'd be looking for is front and rear, right?
Front and rear.
Yes, because getting a rear-facing one is, I think, these days just as important for those little incidents that happen, those little dramas. You know, it really does make a difference to be able to say, oh, you know, we've got the rear covered. So, for example, Uniden have one called the Uniden, I think it's the iGo 70. Now, Uniden have, if there's an R on the product name, it means it's got a rear camera. Now, the iGo 70 doesn't have 4K resolution, but it's better than HD, but it also has a really wide angle view. So that's good. The best you can get is Blackview. You're talking about $800-$900. The next best down from that is I like the Uniden Dash View series. It looks like the Blackview because it doesn't have a screen. It's just a little tube. But you're talking $500 for that. So just touching above your price range. The Uniden iGo 70R, as I said, and the Uniden have literally one in every price point. 2.7-inch screen. It's got parking mode if you want it wired correctly. I think the resolution is excellent. It looks really good, the quality. Simple point, Uniden, Garmin, Navman, Nextbase. There's four brands, none of which you'd be disappointed with, all right? I really don't think that you'd be disappointed with it. A rear view camera on the Navman is going to cost you about $400. As I said, there are black views available for about $420-$430, but they're their low end single channel models. If you want the rear view camera, you're talking $600-$700. So I think that iGo 70R is a bloody great deal at $300. And here's the thing, it's very easy to install a dash cam. The rear camera sounds daunting, but if you just take a bit of time, I've done it in a car, running the camera cable down, you know, the black rubber that goes just run it through there and up into the headliner. It's actually really easy to do. A little screwdriver, a little gentle. It's very easy to do. If you were to pay an installer who might charge you $150, they'll wire it into the car so it, you know, has parking mode and all these things. It's all good, but in the end, just set it up for her so that she doesn't put it in her view. Put it behind the bloody rear view mirror because you don't need to see the screen.
Yep.
They're a distraction.
Yep. Okay.
So get her a Uniden, and you'll feel better about the fact that if anything happens to her or her car, you've got a little bit of help and evidence, and that's why I'd go the rear camera.
Yep. So Uniden iGo 70R for rear.
Yep. R for rear, $300, JB Hi-Fi.
Fantastic, mate. And just before I go, I just want to thank you for another help you gave me with a Wi-Fi extender or mesh with Telstra. It actually works not too bad. It's still dodgy, but yeah, thank you for that advice and your help.
You got a little bit of infill there, did you? Was it easy to set up? Because I struggled with
the
idea.
It was easy to set up, but yeah, nothing flash.
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, that's the next level, mate. Is to invest in a whole of home Wi-Fi network.
Yeah,
that's someone else's 18th, mate. You got parties to pay for.
Mate, I don't want you to talk about that party because it's going to send me broke or my wife. But anyway,
hey. So she's not getting married.
The other one is.
Oh, no!
Mate, I'm telling you, we picked the wrong date.
Well, good luck and congratulations, mate.
Thanks for your help again, buddy.
Cheers.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
That's funny. And if you've got a daughter getting married or costing you large amounts of money, give me a call. Good on you, Michael. Thanks for getting in touch, poor bugger. Who pays for the wedding? It's like, you know, in traditional terms, it's meant to be father of the bride, right? So I've only got one of those, one daughter. Well, she's never getting married. She's never having a boyfriend. It's really that simple. In a couple of years, I'll lock the front door and she'll never be allowed out. Those will be the rules. EFTM.com.
This is the EFTM podcast. EFTM.
Now, I looked this morning and I did my first ECG on an Apple Watch. On my Apple Health report in September 2019, when the Apple Watch Series 4 was announced. Was it Series 4 or Series 5? No, it was Series 5, and it was compatible with the Series 4, maybe. Anyway, the ECG app was launched then. And I remember setting up a watch. I was in the fitness center of Apple Park, very cool building out the back corner of Apple Park, doing an ECG, and I've still got that record of that ECG. A year goes past, we've heard nothing about ECG. Bit more time goes past, we hear that the TGA in Australia have approved the irregular rhythm notification, and then a couple of months more go by and they've approved the ECG function, and now we're just waiting for Apple to release it. Today, iOS 14.5 is out, and with that, Apple Watch OS 7.4 is out, and ECG functionality is now available. It's a great thing. You should turn it on. You should turn on irregular rhythm notifications because you never know what it will pick up. Now, I've done a lot of stories, tape stories, live stories on the television over the last 10 years, 11 years. And with no disrespect to all of the other stories, I did a story last week with Dimity Clancy on A Current Affair. And this story is linked in my story today at EFTM.com on the ECG function being approved. Right down the bottom, I linked to The Current Affair. I challenge you to watch it because it was fascinating. So I showed them how the ECG watch worked and everything. And then I said, take it with you. Take it and, you know, put it on someone and do a test. They went a bit extreme. And I was a bit nervous when I found out what they were doing. They were with Dr. Ross Walker, who I've worked with at 2UE, lovely bloke, cardiologist. And they put this ECG app on the wrist of a 70-plus-year-old man. He did the test, great sinus rhythm, good. That's what Dr. Ross saw. And then, I didn't know this, they put it on a woman who Dr. Ross had just done a proper full ECG, you know, all the sensors strapped to your body, done a full ECG showing that she was in atrial fibrillation. And the Apple Watch, they're sitting there, it takes 30 seconds. And it was the longest 30 seconds of my life watching this result come out. And the Apple Watch detected the exact same thing, atrial fibrillation. Mind-blowing. Captured on camera, did the right thing. It was amazing. It really does work. It could be a life saver. But as I say all the time, it is not a medical diagnostic tool for you. It's a tool you can use to gather information at a point in time that your doctor can use. So I'll give you the example. You're hiking, you're sitting watching TV, you're doing whatever, and you get a notification, irregular heart rhythm. Oh, that's interesting. And you perform an ECG. That's the next step. 30 seconds later, you perform an ECG and it says AFib. Oh, that's no good. Do it again. 10 minutes later, sinus rhythm. You're okay now. Now you could go, whatever. Or you could make an appointment with a doctor and you could say, I'm worried about my heart. And they could perform an ECG and they could say, no, your heart's fine. You could say, hang on a minute, can I just send you this? And you send them a PDF of that ECG and they say, that is worrying. Let's monitor you for 2 days or whatever. Do you know what I mean? They use that information as proof that something might have happened and a reason why they should do some extra tests or something. It's just another tool in the chest of medical professionals. It is not Dr. Google. It is not for you to replace going to a doctor, but it's a phenomenal bit of technology that's now available to download for Series 4, Series 5, Series 6 Apple Watches. You can now do an ECG. Now, before I get to Daniel Ricciardo, I just want to point something out. You've downloaded this show. You've subscribed. Hey, hopefully you've left a rating and a review. But you're also a fan. F-A-N. Fan. Some would say that's a clue. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, so I caught up with Daniel Ricciardo via Zoom. Well, I was lucky enough that McLaren went to a bit of effort for me and recorded the video and audio at their end. It was a painstaking experience to edit it all together, but it was a fun chat. And so without any further ado, let's hear my full chat with Daniel Ricciardo, Aussie Formula One driver with McLaren.
EFTM.
This is the EFTM podcast.
EFTM podcast.
Daniel, great to see you, mate.
Likewise. What's, I believe, well, I'm actually tired after a day of work here, let's say, but I guess you're tired as well because it's 3 a.m. or something.
I'm tired because I should be in bed. No, that's all right. You've been working hard. I'm happy to accommodate whatever time of day works for you. Listen, I was thinking about it. It must be a year since you were in Australia. Are you getting homesick?
Yeah, it's starting to creep in, actually. It's creeping in, but I'm kind of anticipating it to hit me at some point this year. I've been pretty good, like how many years I've been away from home. Like the first year you get a bit homesick, but since then I always had you just got like an objective and you're kind of busy and occupied. So I've always been pretty, let's say strong in that sense, but
yeah.
I think this one's going to test me. Yeah.
Because I feel like McLaren really got you, they got us all with a bit of a tearjerker there at the launch with your nephew and stuff, and that was that was a couple of months ago. So if you're feeling that way a couple of months ago, I guess you've got the races to distract you now.
Yeah, it's like the off season's tough, like the winter, because if I'm ever not a positive person, it's the winter. Like the winter is the one kind of season which does or has the ability to get me down. So yeah. That then compiled on with all the other things, it was. Yeah, so, and the truth is, like, realistically, I'm probably not getting home till earliest Melbourne, otherwise it's really Christmas till I probably see the family, so still a long road ahead.
Let's quickly talk about the race on the weekend, team orders. I listen to the team radio. Is understood your way of saying, okay, Mum, I'll clean my room? Like, it feels like a very just chilled. I'm not gonna lose my mind. I'm just gonna do what I'm told. It's a very relaxed and unassuming response.
Yeah, it's something I've always gone with. Like, I remember when I first joined Red Bull in 2014 in Melbourne, when I got the podium and that. And I think through the race, a lot of my responses were just understood. And I think it was Adrian Newey was like, he just sounded so calm and everything. And I don't know. So I felt like understood was just a nice way of just letting the team know that, yeah, okay, like, I get it. Like, whether it's I'm in control or it's just and I don't really talk that much on the radio. Like, I don't really like to spend too much time on it. So it's just quick, and it lets the team know that I've acknowledged the message, really.
And in reality, for those of us kind of watching the races at home, I don't think anyone in Australia cheering for you would have gone, no, that's out, right? It was just, that's life. It's a second race. You know, later in the year, I figure if you're in a higher situation fighting there, actually fighting with Lando, that's when it'll be a little bit different response, perhaps.
Yeah, it's like, of course, the competitor, like, in me is like, obviously, I want to stay in front. But I also, maybe it's just like maturity and experience now, but I acknowledge that basically I wasn't quick enough. And I think I'm my biggest critic. So in my head, I'm like, you know, if I was quick enough, I would have pulled away and not been in that position, you know. So it's not like the team was holding me back so that Lando could, you know, have that position, if you know what I mean. It was all on me. And obviously I'm not up to speed yet as much as I want. So yeah, just take that one on the chin and you know, figure out a way to be better, as opposed to like jump up and down. And I certainly don't want to create any friction in the team, you know, in race two, that's for sure.
Over 3 or 4 years, you and I have caught up in Barcelona at pre-season testing. And I would always do that because I wanted to get in well ahead of the Melbourne fanatic, craziness of Melbourne for you. You start the year at a home Grand Prix, crazy attention for a whole week, really hard to focus on a race. Was it good to start the year not in Melbourne, especially with a new team?
I mean, like, honestly, from a preparation point of view, yeah. Because it was much more relaxed, you know, in Bahrain. And when I say relaxed, like, not like, I don't want to get the word relaxed and lazy misinterpreted, but yeah, it was just, you know, I had more time basically to myself and to the team, you know, to prepare. And that's where I'm kind of excited to go to Melbourne in November. I think obviously it's like approaching summer, so it should just be a good time of the year regardless. And I think then, you know, a lot of the questions are already answered because it's towards the tail end of the season. So I personally feel I might, you know, be able to actually really enjoy a November slot more than a March one. So so we'll see. But Bahrain was pretty cruisy.
I don't want to do the job for the Oz GP or preempt what they're going to do, but it feels to me like, and you would know this better than anyone at McLaren, you know, in November, there's one thing, the race that stops a nation. So can you ride a winner in November?
So yeah, I think we could have two races that stop a nation. I used to get into the horses, but I don't anymore. I leave all my friends to do the betting or the gambling. But I think, like, I'm hanging out to get home. But I truly do think that the November slot will be received very well.
Talk about the track changes in Melbourne at Albert Park. I'll be honest, took me by surprise. I wasn't really understanding that was going to happen. Radical changes to the track from an idiot's guide. You know, nearly every corner's being shaved off. You know, we're getting essentially more speed out of it. What do you think of the changes?
I'm, let's say, happy that they're making changes. You know, as far as, like, Melbourne's always been a fun track to drive. Like, the layout is cool. It's very, you know, left, right, right, left, like a lot of corner combinations, and it's pretty busy, but it is pretty kind of flowing and narrow and tricky for overtaking. And that's, like, ultimately, I think we want just better Sundays, you know, just from a competitor. You want to be battling. You don't want to just be doing a kind of 60 lap time trial. And so we've when I say we've, I mean F1, and they did ask a bit of our advice as well on what we thought we'd like to change. So let's say collectively, we've given feedback to let's say, make it more of a Sunday racetrack. And hopefully it pans out that way and we can see more opportunities to have some battles.
Did you give feedback about drain covers or anything on the main straight?
Maybe.
Sorry, too soon. That's all right. Still too soon.
Well, it's been 2 years, actually. Time's gone quick. We lost a year with COVID, so 2 years ago.
The Brazil race is 2 weeks before Melbourne. Now, I'm not a, you know, COVID-19 journalist, but gee whiz, I look at the numbers and Brazil is deep in a pandemic, still struggling with a pandemic. Do you think it's right that F1 goes to Brazil in kind of the circumstance where they're still trying to get a hold of things there? And what do you think about then having to potentially do any form of quarantine to get into Australia, given it's so tight after Brazil?
Yeah, that's like logistically alone, it is, you're kind of swapping one end of the globe to the other. So that's, I think, call it a challenge in itself. I am aware of Brazil currently is not in a good place with COVID. I think if we were scheduled to go there this weekend, then yeah, I'm pretty convinced it would be up in the air. I don't think we would be, let's say, all in. I think it's for now, they're kind of on the hope that by then things settle down. But if it's still as it is, then that race could potentially be obviously in question.
So I know they're obviously keen on 23 this year, a bit like last year. I'm sure there are maybe some
circuits, call it, that could fill some gaps if some are lost. So we'll see. Maybe a doubleheader in Australia.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I'm thinking, why not? Why can't we take the reins and just go doubleheader? What would you do? Because doubleheader in Bahrain and Sakhir, same track, different kind of layout. Could you do anything in Melbourne to make it a bit different week to week?
Reverse. Go the opposite way. Clockwise and anti-clockwise. This is going to make headlines now and everyone's going to be like, oh no, what's going on?
Do you know what everyone's going to do? They're going to jump on F1 2020 and they're going to drive backwards.
Yeah. I would love, I mean, especially if we have to, if there is any, let's say, form of quarantine when we get there, to do a doubleheader at least would make, you know, make the time worthwhile. Hopefully we get, you know, a bit of time in Oz as opposed to quarantine circuit.
Any other tracks that you, maybe we could hold that doubleheader at? Have you seen the Bend in Adelaide?
I've seen a track map, but I've never seen, I've never kind of visually seen it. Is it good?
It's a great track and it's purpose built for, you know, all forms of motorsport. So I think there could be something really exciting there. So I think someone needs to pick up the phone and let's work on a month in Australia, because I think Australian, I think the Formula One drivers, teams, everyone would love the fact that we're living the life down here.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know all the drivers like love going to Melbourne for the race. It's definitely one, I mean, Australia's Australia. Everyone knows how beautiful it is. So if I called all the drivers right now and said, hey, what do you feel about spending 2 weeks in Australia? I'm pretty sure none of them are going to whinge and moan.
Now, you've been at McLaren now a couple of months, obviously a few months since the start of the year. You've been in the car for two races and a quick test, I guess you'd call it. The simple question at this point of time in your career is, can you win a world championship with McLaren with what you know thus far?
Yeah. Yeah. The reason why I paused is because, like, I was like, I mean, if it's a yes or no, then it's yes. You know, is it this year? No, but I really already seen like the first couple races and I mean, even like I look at my lap on the weekend and you know, I'm still pretty confident I'm not getting everything out of it. And I was 4/10 off pole or something. So even with that, like the team's closed the gap a bunch. I mean, the rule changes are going to change everything next year, but
yeah.
I just feel like what the team's done, and it looks like this year's another step in that right, you know, in that direction. I don't know, the structure, stability, everyone's really, I don't know, like guns are blazing down here, and it's like really, it's really cool to see. And that fills me with a lot of confidence to give you a yes for the question you asked.
So how different is it getting from one car to another? For an idiot like me who, you know, you drive a different road car, there's differences. What is the difference between one car and another that you've got to learn? And how does it feel different?
You probably hit it on the head. Like it's all about feel. So you know, there's visually some differences, you know, even like your seating position, like the mirrors might be a bit different. So like maybe when you turn right, like a 90 degree right hander, maybe the mirror blocks a little bit your line of vision, where in say the Renault, maybe it was a 45 degree corner and things like this. So there's like little things like that. Like your vision has to adapt in a way, but the biggest thing is like the seat in your pants, like how the car moves underneath you and your like call it feel and perception of, okay, I'm on the limit, or oh no, there's still a bit more. And that's really it. And I think it's like, it's a little bit like, I don't know, just doing, it's like practicing a new sport. It's like, in a way, eventually like muscle memory tells you, okay, how to hit the ball correctly. And that's like finding the limit of a new car. I kind of just need to do it a few more times to get that, call it muscle memory, to tell me, all right, I'm comfortable here. I'm comfortable here on the limit.
It's not quite like going from a Renault Clio to a McLaren 720.
Yeah. I mean, it's different. It is different. But it's these little things, and that's ultimately, like at this level, everyone is finding the limit.
But I'm assuming the simulator doesn't really help with that feel, because the simulator, I'm assuming, doesn't give you the feel. It just gives you things like wheel movements and stuff that you need to adjust to, and aero changes they make to understand the performance in corners. The simulator doesn't help get comfortable in the car, it just helps you get quicker in the car?
Yeah, it's, the sim, I guess, the sim's good for trying like setup changes, and then for me, feeling, okay, changing the front spring helped in the faster corners, but it didn't help in the slow corners or things like that. So it gives me a bit more of an understanding of the car, but the real feel is the real thing, because it even ultimately, like, okay, what's stopping me from going quicker? Well, I think I'm going to spin, and therefore, whatever, crash. Where in the sim, you spin, nothing happens. Yeah. So there's also reset. Just that realism of consequence in the real car.
Yeah. The interesting thing, when you sat down, you're like, oh, do I need to wear a hat? Do you wear a helmet in the simulator?
Yeah.
Why? Consequence.
Well, they do move a lot. So the actual, so we're in like a proper cockpit, but they slide and you know, jump around a bit. And so even if you have a crash in the sim, there can still be like a bit of a jolt. And obviously they're very like high tech pieces of equipment. So if they do have a, call it glitch, and if it was to react quickly, you want to be protected if your head obviously hits or something. So, yeah. And actually, another thing, sorry, all the radio and stuff's inside, built into the helmet in the sim. So for us to, let's say, have communication during a run.
All right, it feels like dinner time for you. Let me give you a couple of quick things before I let you go. Who's a better racer, Lando or Max?
I mean, I have to say Max, but it's probably just based off I've had more experience with him. But I mean, look, judging by like the last weekend, Lando certainly raced really well.
Do you look back on decisions you've made, like Renault and stuff, and do you have any regrets?
No regrets. No.
that's tattooed somewhere, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. But it is true. Like, no regrets. And I got asked the other day, looking at, say, Red Bull this year, it looks like maybe they can fight for a championship. I think it was like, do you wish you were still there, or do you think you still would have been there? And I said, even if I didn't move that year, like even if I stayed with Red Bull instead of Renault for that 1 or 2 years, I think even by now, this year, I would have moved. Like I couldn't have seen myself spending another, 3 years there. So regardless of whether I went to Renault or not, I still don't see myself. I didn't see myself at Red Bull, say in 2021. Yeah.
Portuguese Grand Prix, thoughts, hopes, goals?
I mean, honestly, just, this sounds really conservative. I don't mean it in this way, but progress. Like I want to leave, regardless of my position, I want to leave Portugal with more of a spring in my step. You know, yeah. I left Imola like I would say a bit flat. You know, I still knew there's a lot of work to do. So I want to leave Portugal feeling like I've ticked a few more boxes.
There's been talk about supercars and Bathurst and stuff. Do you want to keep in Zach's ear about maybe running a, let's do a demo. Let's run an F1 car around Bathurst like Jensen did in 2011. Would that be fun if we come to Australia for a period of time?
Yeah, if that's like if we did a double header or something and we had the luxury of time in Australia, absolutely, absolutely. I think I'm seeing Zach. I'll probably see him tomorrow at some point, probably in the factory, or so I'll I might have to run it by him. But I have already actually, so I'll remind him.
I have one more thing, but I need you to wait 20 seconds, okay?
Sure.
Just give
sure.
me 20 seconds here. 20 seconds. Do I need to talk to Zach Brown about your salary? I mean, are you earning enough? All this merchandise you're selling? Are you earning enough money at McLaren?
not really.
I mean, what's doing? You've got wine. Beautiful.
Mate, you're the one that's spiking all our sales.
No, I was quite blown away by the amount of people. I spoke to a cameraman at Channel 9. A mate of mine I was at the bus yesterday picking up my daughter, and I said, I'm talking to Daniel anymore. I got the wine, it arrived yesterday. I'm like, oh, wow. I'm assuming you don't do all that stuff for the money. I'm assuming you do it because you're at a peak. You need to capitalize on your brand and your career right now.
Yeah, I mean, well, firstly, thanks a lot for showing some love. Probably a relatively quick way to put it is these things are, I think in life, like there'll be, you can have like good distractions and bad distractions. And for me, and I'm not alone in this, but these are like good distractions. The truth is I don't breathe Formula One 24 hours a day. Like I've been here all day, but tonight when I go home, I'll want to just switch off and not think about F1. So,
a bit of wine.
Yeah. So there is time. There is time. And it's not like, oh, why are you doing that when you should be focused on the race? Like you can only do so much till you're burnt out from it as well. So these things are like good distractions. I enjoy it. It's also the truth is like if I wasn't doing what I'm doing, I probably wouldn't have these opportunities. So I think appreciative of it, and therefore I'm enjoying like making the most of it, and I'm learning about whether it's running merchandise or running or trying to run a bit of a wine business or so. They're just like, I think I'm just, let's say, running with the opportunities and just trying to learn more and be around people in other fields that can kind of teach me about business and other walks of life. So I just take it also as education, and it's fun. And it's cool, like it does make me smile, like to see other people wear it or drink it, and it's like, oh, that's, yeah, I don't know, makes me happy.
Well, I'm glad it makes you happy. It's good stuff, and man, I'm really excited about the year. I hope you are too, and hopefully we can catch up again during the year when you've got a few race wins under your belt.
Yeah, that'll make me most happy.
Cheers, Daniel. Thanks, buddy.
Awesome. All right, thank you, Trevor.
This is the
If you've got a question about technology, anything you'd like to know, get in touch. Go to the website EFTM.com. Click on Ask Trev. That's what Trish did. G'day, Trish.
Hi, Trevor. How are you?
Really good. What can I do for you?
I am looking for a mobile phone for my dad. He is about 79 years old.
What's he got now? What sort of phone? Is he rocking a phone at all?
He is. He's currently using an iPhone 5. And it's coming to the end of its life. Yeah. But the problem is that he struggles with using the touch screen. He doesn't seem to be able to apply enough pressure to the screen to swipe.
Really? So it's not the opposite. He's not applying too much pressure, is it?
Well, we've tried to direct the finger and, you know, tried to guide him. But, no, for some reason he doesn't seem to be able to grasp it. He's put up with it so far, and he's done it. And I'd had a chat with him, and he said, "Look, I think I need to stay with a touch screen because that's the way of, you know, technology."
Yep.
I don't know. I've had a look around. I can see there's some big button phones around, but he also wants although he doesn't use it, he wants to have access to his emails on his phone, and therefore that would mean data. But not that he's ever going to use it,
He wants it. You want to have it. Yeah. If it's available, I want it. As simple as that.
Yeah, apparently.
I'm assuming things like QR code scanning in this modern age is important.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it is. Yeah, and he can't do that at the moment. Well, sorry, he can, but he's not set up for it.
Right. So the other thing I'd say to you is he's been using an iPhone. I worry about him changing to any other brand, because anything new is going to be another learning and challenging experience, and I don't know how much he's going to be up for that. So I wonder if it's just go for the simplest, cheapest new iPhone you can get and just have a kind of swap it out kind of mentality. So, for example, the iPhone SE, which is not heavily marketed, but it's their entry-level phone. The cheapest one is $679. Remember, this is brand new from Apple. It's the same, everything's the same concept. So there's still a little round home button at the bottom. Whereas with every other iPhone today, you don't get the home button, you get a swipe up and Face ID, and just feels like there's a whole bunch of new things to learn there. An iPhone SE, I thought it was one of the greatest phones last year. It's just affordable, easy to use, all that kind of stuff. But it's got the guts of an iPhone 11 in it. So it's got the power and everything that's going to mean it's going to last another 5 years. Absolutely, this thing, right? And any app that the government or whoever comes out with is going to run on it. So my initial reaction is go, can we get him an iPhone SE, because that's the cheapest brand new iPhone you can get. The second level reaction to that is, can we get a, if that's too much money, can we look at a refurbished phone, which is people like Boost Mobile do these refurbished phones, which is, lawyers and all other big businesses, when they upgrade all their staff phones, they get sent to a central place. They get wiped, cleared, police checked, cleaned, everything, and they sell them. Like an iPhone 7 is $220. Like, it's, great value, and it's brand new in terms of its capabilities compared to the iPhone 5 you've got. So my feeling is you need to stay in the Apple ecosystem just for his best interest and yours, because who's he going to call when he's got a question?
Yeah, well, that's the problem. Yeah, we all use it, iPhones, so we're all familiar with it. Yeah.
You get him a Samsung, great phone, and some serious value, because you could spend $300 on a brand new phone and it's going to do everything he needs. But when he calls and says, but where's the email? Far out. Well, you don't have a reference point. So that's my feeling. My gut feeling is brand new iPhone SE, which is the cheapest iPhone you can buy brand new, or refurbished phone, refurbished iPhone from Boost Mobile, boost.com.au.
Boost Mobile. Okay, yeah. Great. All right. And look, Thank you very much.
They come with a 12-month warranty. They come in a little box, or not an Apple box, but they're a great phone. I've used them, the refurbished phones, and it allows you to choose, a reasonably good one within your budget. So again, for example, the iPhone 8 still has the round home button at the bottom, $300. So, I think there's some value there for you.
Great. Okay. No, I really appreciate it. Yeah, no, the you're right. Staying with the same technology would be good for all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
all right.
Okay. Trish,
good luck.
Cool. Thanks. Thank you very much.
No worries at all. And if you've got a question like Trish, just go to the website, EFTM.com. We'll try and help you out as best we can. Trev along with you. If you've got a tech question, just go to the website, EFTM.com, click Ask Trev. We'll try and help you out as best we can. G'day, Suzanne.
Hi, Trevor. How are you going?
Really good. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you.
What can I do you for?
Trevor, I was just wondering, I've got a Samsung Galaxy S10 Plus, the 5G. I was just wondering, what sort of phone is it? Is it worth keeping, hanging on to, or am I better off to upgrade? My contract expired, and I'm just looking to getting a better phone.
What's wrong with it? When you say better phone, what would be better? What could be better for you?
Well, it has glitches. It keeps shutting out. I'll be in the middle of a conversation and it'll just drop dead. And I have to sometimes ring people up to 5 times to finish a conversation, which is quite annoying.
Wow. And is that happening? Are you able to locate? Is that happening in a certain place? Like, do you feel like it's network-based, or is it literally just the phone and it happens anywhere you are at any time?
No, I'm not sure. It might be network-based, because it tends to happen at home the most. But but then again, it's at home that I make longer phone calls, so to speak.
And which telco are you with?
I'm with Telstra.
When you're at home and you look at the you know, the top of the screen where it shows you how much mobile signal you've got. How many bars do you think you've got at home normally?
Two or three.
And do you have Wi-Fi at home as well?
We do.
Have you ever noticed anywhere on the phone anything called VoLTE or Wi-Fi call?
That VoIP call, is that one?
Yeah.
That's the only one I have noticed.
So here's what I want you to do. Now, I can't tell you exactly where it is, but just have a dig around. You might be able to Google this as well. But Telstra have a thing called Wi-Fi calling, right? Now, what it means is when you are in a Wi-Fi network and connected to a Wi-Fi network, your phone uses the Wi-Fi network to make and take calls instead of the mobile network. And it does that because a lot of people have really bad mobile network at their home. And so it goes, oh, look, I'll prioritize the Wi-Fi network because it's better. But I honestly have never had a great experience with it. It's fantastic when you're in a place that has no mobile service. So my mum's pub, for example, no mobile service. But when I turn my phone on, it connects to the Wi-Fi network and I can make and take calls. Very cool. But when I'm at home and I've got mobile coverage, even if it's only two bars, I find that the Wi-Fi calling is the thing that causes calls to drop out sometimes. So before you go getting rid of your phone and spending money, turn that off.
Now, okay.
Now, I'm just going to quickly look up in a Samsung phone where it is, but it's normally under settings and then mobile, or it may just be settings and Wi-Fi calling. Right? So navigate to settings. Actually, I'm just looking online. Open the phone app. So just open up the phone app itself, and then up the top of the screen, there'll be three little buttons, three little dots, which means more options. You want to go more options and then settings, and look in there for Wi-Fi calling, and then turn it off. If it's on, turn it off. If it's off, then we've got a problem because it appears that essentially, you don't have it. You know what? If it's off, turn it on.
Okay.
So it's a weird thing, right? My guess is it's on by default, but if it's not on, then you may have really bad mobile reception at your home, and you may benefit from Wi-Fi calling and get less dropouts. But I honestly, the Samsung Galaxy S10 is a great phone. It's only a couple of years old. Even though your contract's up, I find I can suggest no reason to you to upgrade. Because you've got a good phone. It's a great phone. And here's the thing. Are you on a do you know what you're spending every month with Telstra?
I'm $69 now, but I'm just thinking about changing over to Aldi.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I switched to Boost a couple of weeks ago, which is also on the Telstra network. Aldi is on the Telstra network. And you're going to save huge money. Like I'm spending I recharged the other day for $40. Too much. I only need 30. So, you know, that's more than half what you're spending. That's a big saving. And that phone, honestly, Suzanne, will last you another 2 or 3 years before you need to worry. So save some cash, switch to Aldi or Boost trying to think who else is on the Telstra network. Belong. I think Woolworths is with Optus. Anyway, switch to another Telstra carrier or switch to someone else because you've got more mobile networks there, right?
Yes.
Give them all a try and find out who has the best coverage at your home. But first and foremost, Suzanne, go and turn off Wi-Fi calling or turn it on and let's see if we can prevent those dropouts.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right,
Suzanne. I'm really glad you said that. Thank you very much for your help.
Good luck.
Okay.
Cheers.
Thank you.
And it's an interesting one, right, because you're thinking you're an idiot, mate. You suggest she turn it off, but then she also suggested to turn it on. But it can be the problem. It can also be the solution. That's how weird Wi-Fi calling is in my book. Anyway, love to know your thoughts. If you use Wi-Fi calling or you've got good or bad experiences, let me know. Maybe I'm blinded by my own experience. EFTM.com.
This is the EFTM podcast.
EFTM. All right, thank you for listening. Lovely to have your company today and this week. And lots going on. I've got a great, video being published on Thursday, which is a car, but it's more about your house. Fascinating experience that I had, and I wanted to share with you in a video review that will be published on Thursday morning. So stay tuned. Tomorrow morning on the Today Show, we are talking winter warmers and much more coming up. Anyway, keep reading EFTM.com. There'll be code words appearing there for a fan like you over the weeks ahead. And I'm not sure we're going to get the app out, but we'll do our best. Do our bloody darndest. Thanks for listening. Thank you for downloading. We'll be back again real soon here on the EFTM podcast.